My guest is singer, songwriter, and pianist Bob Dureau. He came to New York in the early 1950s to be close to the music of Charlie Parker, but his own music changed course. While most of the boppers were blowing chord changes, Dureau was writing and singing songs. Dureau became one of the few singers tapped by Miles Davis to write and perform with him. Over the years, Dureau has written many songs with lyricist Fran Lansman. She's best known for her song "Spring Can Really Hang You Up the Most." In the 70s, Dureau wrote such tunes as Multiplication Rock and My Hero Zero for a Saturday morning kids' TV show called Schoolhouse Rock. His best-known song, I'm Hip, has become a standard among jazz musicians and singers. When Bob Dureau visited the Fresh Air Studios, he sat down at the piano, and I asked him to sing a little from his biggest hit.
It's a hit? Gee, I've been hoping it'd be a hit. I've been waiting in the alley for the royalty checks to come. You must know, of course, that I wrote it with Dave Frischberg. It's our only collaboration. Well, Blossom recorded it, and he and I recorded it. Mel Torme recorded. Who's next? Let's make this a real hit. Ascavadava. I need it. Well, I'm hip. I'm no square. I'm alert. I'm awake. I'm aware. I am always on the scene, making the rounds, digging those sounds. I read People magazine. Well, no, I don't think I read People. I read some of those hip magazines, you know what I mean? Because I'm hip. What's the latest thing? Should I be reading New Yorker or something?
The word used to be Playboy magazine in the original song,
yeah.
Right? Did you always know a lot of hipsters yourself? Did you ever think of yourself as a hipster?
No, I was an observer. I had a lot of really hip friends. But I'm just playing the part in the song, really.
I've always loved your singing, and I think that your voice doesn't fit into any of the kind of standard categories in jazz or pop singing. You know, in jazz you have the blues shouters with the really big voice, and then you have the ballad singers, someone between a Sinatra or an Eckstein. And your voice, I think, is pretty uncategorizable.
Well, thank you so much.
How did you find your voice? I mean, how did you develop your own singing style?
Well, I think it happened in my student days when I was studying jazz, and when I realized that a lot of the jazz men weren't known as singers, but they did sing. Maybe they did it to help the band get the job, I'm not sure, but way back to all those guys like Lionel Hampton and Trummy Young and, of course, Louis Armstrong, Jack T. Garden. You know, they would sing a song during the night, and I thought, gee, that's great, I can sing too. Nothing against it, and I started singing. And I was influenced by Nat King Cole and Joe Mooney and a lot of the more modern people.
At the time you were coming of age in the 1950s, it was a period when a lot of jazz musicians were playing bebop, and there was very little singing that went along with that.
I always had a sort of a squelch on me. You know, I didn't want to be corny and sing, but I loved singing, so I would practice in my own room. But when I went out with the cats, we'd blow bebop, and I was a bebop student in New York City.
So it was considered a little square to sing?
Yeah, I guess it was.
You had mentioned that a lot of the bop musicians didn't really go for singing, but I know that Miles Davis actually asked you to write a song for an album he was doing of Christmas songs.
Yes, he was to take part in the Columbia Jingle Bell Jazz album. Each Columbia artist or some of them were doing Christmas songs.
Did he say what he liked about your singing?
Well, he had already dug my first LP, and he liked my singing, so he called me suddenly one day, and actually his attorney did most of the talking, but he said, I want you to write me a Christmas song and sing it. And so I wrote a sort of a blue Christmas, thinking about the other side of it, you know.
Can you play a few bars of the song you wrote for him?
Oh, yeah, here's the line that might go down. Lots of hungry homeless children in your own backyard, while you're very, very busy addressing 20 zillion Christmas cards. Now Yuletide is a season to receive and oh to give, but all you December do-gooders rush around and loudly rant and rave. Merry Christmas, I hope you have a bright one, but for me it's blue.
And what happened with the song? You recorded it for him?
We recorded it with his band. And it came out on that particular album, and I guess it's been reissued on other albums.
One of the things that you started doing in the 1950s, I think, was writing lyrics to solo jazz improvisation lines that, say, Charlie Parker had played on record. How did you get exposed to that idea?
I was inspired to that end by Annie Ross and Eddie Jefferson and King Pleasure. They were doing those things, and especially Annie Ross did the Twisted. And I thought, oh, she's so clever, and it's funny, and it can be funny. But I started tinkering around with some of the jazz recordings. You take a jazz recording and put lyrics, a syllable to every note, if you can. And when Bird died, I decided to write a sort of a story of Charlie Parker to the Yardbird Suite. And that was my first effort.
Did you do a couple of bars of that?
Oh, yeah. I put my own intro to it to get your attention.
Hey, jazz fans, I'm talking to you. I sing this song hoping you'll all find out the man who wrote the Yardbird Suite. Leave you no doubt and tell you about.
That's 8 bars plus intro. Is that enough?
Yeah. You were saying earlier that a lot of jazz musicians thought it was kind of square to sing. But if you were singing to a Parker tune, was it different? Was that more acceptable?
Definitely different. That was a new kind of hip singing.
Your fans include not only jazz listeners, but also a lot of children who know your music from the Schoolhouse Rock series on television, and you even had an album out a few years ago called Multiplication Rock.
Oh, yeah, that was a great opportunity, a commission to write songs for kids. And at that time, I wasn't really doing much club work. I figured the adults don't want to hear me. They're listening to rock and roll, so I'll do something for the kids, and it was a wonderful opportunity, and now they come into the nightclub, you know, they're 25 or even 29, and they want to hear some of those kids' songs, and so, I do them right there in the nightclub.
So they remember you from the series.
Yes.
Can you do a few bars of one of those songs for us?
Oh, yeah. Well, I always thought of this as my theme song. It's the Lucky Rabbit Who Likes to Sing and Dance.
Well, you can call me Lucky, 'cause Lucky's my name. Singing and dancing, that's my game. I never did a whole day's work in my life. Still everything seemed to turn out right. Like a grasshopper on a summer day, I just love to play and pass the time away. 'Cause I was born 'neath a lucky star.
They said I'd come far. Here I am on NPR.
A lot of people probably would feel funny writing songs for children. Was it hard, or was it different?
It was different. Well, I'd always wanted to play and sing for children, and I've always dug them, you know. I like little people. And I was the Uncle Bobby in a lot of my friends who had children long before I did, and of course I had my own. When I started this series, my daughter was just at the right age for that kind of thing, multiplication, sixth grade or less. Third, fourth, fifth grade. So it was, like I say, a great opportunity, and I really loved it. And I played in a lot of schools in Manhattan just to see if they were digging me on TV. Suddenly I was a star, you know.
You've been recording on your own record label, and you distribute your records yourself, and I think you have a whole network of listeners around the country who you mm-hmm. can even send cards to when you know you're going to be performing in
yes.
their part of town. And I think that you have a certain commitment on the part of your listeners because you're so unique, and mm-hmm. also because it's hard to find you sometimes.
Yeah, a lot of them have stuck with me through thick and thin, and I must give credit to the great radio stations around the country who've kept me alive even when I wasn't there in person.
But even today when you came to our radio station, you met up with one of your listeners on
yes.
the way here. And I know you've done that in the past. When you go to a city, you tend to call up the people who've corresponded with you
yes.
in the past.
I like to give back when I can, yeah.
A lot of people would prefer to have distance, I think, mm-hmm. from the people who listen to them. It's interesting mm-hmm. to me that you seek out your listeners.
Yeah, I used to call myself the world's greatest living room entertainer. You know, I would sing for my supper or anything like that.
Okay. Well, I wish you the best, and I thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry Gross. It was a pleasure.
Bob DeRoe's new album is called Scabba Dabba.